crime is down to virtually nothing in Washington. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. President Trump wrote that on Truth Social this morning after he sent National Guard troops and federal agents on patrol in D.C. And he wrote, Mayor Muriel Bowser has become very popular for working with him. As another Trump post calls crime totally out of control in Chicago, where he may take action next. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says he'd sue to block National Guard troops, calling that illegal, telling CBS Face the Nation.
Notice he never talks about where the most violent crime is occurring, which is in red states. Illinois is not even in the bottom half of states in terms of violent crime.
Now, Republicans have countered that many of those cities in red states are run by Democrats.
This is Fox's Rich Edson at the White House.
Now, President Trump's federal policing surge here in Washington, D.C. is entering its fourth week. D.C. officials say violent crime is down 44% compared to the same three-week stretch from last year.
At least 800 people are reported dead in an earthquake disaster in Afghanistan.
Families are crawling through rubble in search of loved ones in small towns throughout eastern Afghanistan, where a magnitude 6 earthquake striking Sunday leveled homes and buildings outside Jalalabad. Several aftershocks followed. Much of the homes in that rural land are built using wood and mud brick and are not made to withstand quakes.
That's Fox's Evan Brown. Israel's security cabinet has met as they get ready to ramp up the war going into Gaza City next.
Israel says it's one of the last Hamas strongholds, and they have been warning civilians who live there to move south, saying their evacuation is, quote, inevitable. But many Palestinians who call Gaza City home say at this point in the war they feel nowhere is safe, with some saying they're just too weak to flee.
Fox's Jeff Paul. A flotilla of boats aiming to bring food and other aid to Palestinians had to turn back to Spain because of stormy weather. Some anti-war protesters, including climate activist Greta Thunberg, were on board, hoping to get past an Israeli blockade. They couldn't do that a few months ago in another flotilla. America's listening to Fox News.
The children of our nation know little to nothing about 9/11, but the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is righting this wrong by helping teachers educate kids in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their nonfiction first-person accounts are told through videos and the Discovering Heroes book series. The Institute offers full scripted curriculum units with background for teachers, a speakers bureau for classrooms, a mobile exhibit that's an interactive museum with 9/11 artifacts and FDNY guides. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org.
He's coming. He's coming. Here we go.
Surprise! Your table saw broke! Also, the warranty expired weeks ago, so you need to pay for a new one out of pocket!
At Progressive, we know small business owners don't usually like surprises, because they cost you money. But a good surprise that could save you money? Getting a commercial auto quote from Progressive.
Oh, and the replacement part you ordered doesn't fit, so it's completely useless!
What a waste!
Surprise yourself. See if you can save in as little as 8 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Manol Tiasasopo. Happy Labor Day, everybody. The holiday is upon us, and the Yuma Police Department is encouraging the public to celebrate responsibly. YPD is increasing patrols for impaired drivers and reminding folks not to drink and drive. This means that extra patrols will be on the lookout for people driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. That detail will be in place until tonight. And today also marks the beginning of dove hunting season. In response, the Yuma County Sheriff's Office is sharing a reminder for all those outdoor enthusiasts. YCSO reminds us that hunting is strictly prohibited in parks and preserves. It's also unlawful to discharge a firearm within a quarter mile of an occupied structure without permission of the owner. Lastly, remember to leave no trace, as shotgun cases or wildlife remains left behind are prohibited and subject to penalties. Stay safe, hunt responsibly, and enjoy the season. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local weather and sports news.
Sunny and hot today with a high of 109 this afternoon, 86, and partly cloudy tonight. Temperatures drop back a bit starting tomorrow, but the humidity goes up again. 102 on Tuesday, 84 Tuesday night. Wednesday, sunny and 102.
You said you'd never buy your kid candy from the checkout aisle. Or forget extra diapers. And never give in to a meltdown. You'd never lick your thumb to clean their face. Never let them have too much screen time. And never bribe them for just one more bite. You say you'd never let them out in public without their hair brushed. Never, ever become a minivan mom. And you'd never give them your phone for a quiet dinner.
Calling boss work phone.
So when you say you'd never leave your child in a hot car, know it can happen. Cars get hot fast, and kids can be at risk in temperatures as low as 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Never happens. Before you leave the car, always stop, look, lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
I'm sitting here with Dan Han. I wanted to say Han. I thought it was Han. I'm glad I never said it out loud to you, because I would have said it wrong.
Answer to both. A lot of people do that.
But it's two N's.
It's two N's. My grandfather, his family came from Germany. And, you know, I guess that's how the story goes. You know, they changed your name at Ellis Island. Anyway, Grandpa says it's Han. And as far as I'm concerned, it's Han.
I wonder, now that you're saying that, I'm thinking, like, I hear that story all the time. Oh, it was too hard for the Americans, so they changed our last name to such and such. I wonder if that's just like a way to like dig in, you know? You think that really happened?
Well, you know, we're going to get into it, but I'm an immigration officer, and I will tell you that, especially when we don't know the language, you write down what you hear.
Sure.
And so that's kind of how it goes. And I would suspect that in the 1800s, it was even more lacking.
You're probably right. Well, I'm glad you're able to come on. I know you like to plan things out. I'm the opposite. I like to live by the seat of my pants. No, fly by the seat of my pants.
Bad idea.
Yeah? Why?
Especially when it comes to flying. All you're doing is asking for a problem and a crash. So, no.
Well, I've heard, tell me if I'm wrong, but I've heard the Border Patrol pilots are some of the best pilots out there because of that reason. They fly by the seat of their pants. They're cowboys.
No, I don't agree with that.
You don't?
I don't agree with that.
Oh, okay.
You know, but the Air and Marine unit of the Border Patrol has evolved since 9/11. Before that, you had to be a Border Patrol agent before you could be a pilot. And so being an agent and understanding what it takes to be an agent on tracking and taking that to the platform, being in the air and seeing it was a huge force multiplier. But we hire people straight out of college that are pilots. They don't have that skill, and so they have to learn it, and it takes them years versus or even a decade to become what a Border Patrol agent that goes from being on the ground into that pilot seat. There is a noticeable difference for those that don't take the initiative, and I'm not saying that the military pilots or the college kids that come in and do this don't ever get there, because there are certainly examples of those that have mastered it, but I think there's such a learning curve. And safety for any pilot is the number one priority. And the CBP Air Marine unit won't keep them flying if they're not safe.
Yeah, well, I hear that. Because the equipment as well, I mean, that's millions of dollars in some cases.
Right.
And that's kind of how I met you. I met you because I was interested in flying. It's always been a goal of mine, was to learn how to fly. And I don't know if it was just because I wanted to say I knew how to fly or what. Maybe what it was that if there was an emergency situation on a commercial flight, I could be like, I can get this bird down, okay? Everybody calm down. I'm a pilot. Why are you laughing at that?
I think every pilot thinks that, you know, especially after they get their private pilot license. They're like, I'm going to go get in a commercial airline, something like that happen. And there's even obviously, if there's nobody else on the plane and you have a pilot's license, you should step up because you understand the aerodynamics.
Yeah, sure.
But the differences between flying your training aircraft and flying a commercial airliner are so night and day.
Yeah, I mean, that was an expensive lesson to learn once I got into the little Cessnas. You know, I'm like, this is not what it looks like in the commercial cockpit. There's so many buttons. Like, why do you need all those buttons? Surely they don't all do something.
Well, I'm sure they do, but can you imagine being a brand new student and your first flight is in a cockpit like that? I mean, the military pilots, that's exactly how they learn.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I, being a young man trying to learn that, I think I would be completely over my head, yeah. and I may not have made it.
You think so? And that, so you, when I looked at your resume, it's like a scroll. If I let that go, it just goes on the floor. It just keeps rolling out. So you were in the Navy. When did you
Air Force?
Oh, sorry. I don't know why I keep thinking Navy, but yeah, Air Force. So you're smart. All the smart guys go to the Air Force, right? That's what I hear.
Or the lazy ones. So my dad was a Marine. I always thought I was going to be a Marine.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't work out that way, and I ended up in the Air Force. So
when did you enlist?
Well, I enlisted when I was 17. I'd already graduated from high school. But I didn't go in until about 2 months after my 18th birthday. But it was in January of 89.
Do you feel like you kind of were motivated by your dad then? In the sense of like, I want to prove to him that I'm going to be something. I want to do what he did. Or is it on your own volition? You thought, this is what I want to do.
It certainly my dad's influence had a lot to do with it. Growing up, I would wear his dress blue jacket as my Halloween costume. The idea of being in the military was very appealing to me. What I wanted to do is I wanted to be in law enforcement, okay. But I was 17 years old.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do that in the state of Arizona. You had to be 21. And so the military was the route that was going to let me do that. And I was going to be a Marine until I found out that I couldn't be a Marine or a Marine MP until I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to wait a year and a half to become a cop. And the Air Force allowed me to do it at 17 if my parents signed for it. And since I went in just after my 18th birthday,
you didn't
that's
need
exactly
them, so.
What happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why? Why did you want to be in law enforcement?
You know, it's from about the time I was 14 years old, I was in the sheriff's cadet programs in Yavapai County, and so that's the precursor of what Explorer program is today. And I just really enjoyed that part of it. I think a lot of it for me as a young man was being able to carry a gun at work and wearing a uniform. You know, all those things that young kids don't don't see the bigger picture of, but. We would work the county fair and help with parking, and I would work in the jail and help, but then the inmates didn't have access to a telephone. So a volunteer had to come in and dial the number and hand the receiver through and sit there while they talked on the phone. And so we would do that as volunteers. And so, you know, it just started to become part of who I was.
Interesting. So Yavapai County, that's where you grew up?
Yeah, in Prescott.
Prescott?
Yeah.
Wow. Prescott is gorgeous.
I miss it during the summertime for sure, yeah. Living yeah. in Yuma.
It's grown so much. It's kind of like a hidden gem, I would say.
Well, I think it's grown so much to the detriment to those of us that grew up there back in the 80s, because it's like, why'd they put a road through this great park?
Yeah.
But I will tell you that it saves us almost 10 minutes to get from my house to downtown. So there were some benefits to it, but you know, you miss the old place, and you can never go back.
Do you get enamored by like cowboy history, like Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday?
Actually, very much so. I mean, my first duty station was in Douglas, Arizona. I actually worked in Tombstone around there and had a checkpoint and stuff, and was very much into that very early on. Lot of information about Wyatt Earp, and I have several books at home on Wyatt Earp.
Yeah,
so.
I like that guy. Well, law enforcement. There you go. There's
right.
your tie-in.
Right.
You follow the lawman. I grew up down in Wilcox, so not too far from Douglas.
Sure.
We would wrestle that tournament all the time. There's, Agua Prieta right there?
Mm-hmm.
It's a border town. So I grew up in those neck of the woods. So Wyatt Earp, the Indians, Cochise, Geronimo.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Chiricahua Mountain Range. It's all things that we learned about and lived, actually, you know, in those mountains around there. So it's very fascinating to me. When I watch, like, the movie Tombstone, I just love it. I love it. I feel like that's me.
There's a lot there's a lot of similarities to it. I just wish I knew where that creek was that they filmed that scene with Johnny Ringo up on the river, because it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's several creeks down there. I know where they are. I've often thought, like, if the world goes to pot, you know, like the Red Dawn type situation.
Sure.
I would probably flee to those mountains because I know them very well. And it's like out there. I mean, people don't know unless you've really been through the woods and out there. But there's several creeks that are running through those mountain ranges. And yeah, I love it out there. It's gorgeous. It's a great place to grow up. How long were you down in Douglas?
A little over 4 years.
Kids?
Lived in Sierra Vista.
Did you have kids at that time?
No, but I met my wife in Sierra Vista, and that's where we got married.
Well, she's from Sierra Vista?
So she went to high school in Sierra Vista. Hmm. And,
Buena Vista?
Buena High, yeah.
Buena High?
Buena High. And so that's where we met. It wasn't 99. I got promoted and transferred, and we went to Nogales from there. And we did have a kid in Sierra Vista. Our second one was born in Sierra Vista. Both of them were born at that hospital.
So you did the Air Force 4 years, then got out, or did you go a little bit more?
I ended up Army National Guard for a little while. And then when I got out, I came home, wanted to be around mom and dad. And I went to the police academy in Tucson, which at the time was Arizona Law Enforcement Training Academy. And while I was there, dad transferred from the college in Prescott to Yuma.
AWC.
And I had an obligation to a police department in Prescott, not the Prescott Police Department, but because they sponsored me at the academy, so I was up there. And then after a while, I wanted to be with mom and dad, so I moved down here. Mm-hmm. Ended up working at AWC's police department, and then at the sheriff's department. And our current sheriff was my supervisor at the time. So,
is that right?
Yeah, so it's nice to have some history, yeah.
And then so you went from there, got in the Border Patrol, went down to Douglas was your first stop?
Yeah, I worked in 9 different places during my 28 years at the Border Patrol. Yeah.
When did you, what year did you retire?
In July of 22. So just barely
just recently,
over 3 years. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All up to the end. I met you around that time, maybe.
Pretty
because
close.
You were getting into the flight school stuff. How old is your flight school?
Well, so I took ownership of it on January 1st of this year, 25. The flight school, I want to say, has been around since 17. Jared Hall.
Oh, I didn't know
started
that.
Started it, I believe. He started it, but what year exactly he started it, I'm not quite sure. But I think it was around 17-ish.
It was pre-pandemic.
Right. Mm. And so as I was getting, I started flying sport pilot aircraft and the powered parachute in 18, and then became a sport pilot instructor.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just on a whim, or?
I'd always wanted to be a pilot. When I was in high school, a couple of my friends were taking ground school at the community college. Since dad was going to school there or working there, I could get tuition for free. So I jumped into the class, and at about 2 weeks into it, I don't have a math brain. And I struggled every day just to pull off a C in high school in math. And 2 weeks into it, I couldn't handle the math concepts. And so I walked away. And then being in the Air Force, I had opportunities to do some stuff. I actually was going to get out of the Air Force and go into the Army in the Warrant Officer Program to be, I wanted to be a helicopter pilot at the time. And as I was going through the process, I failed my hearing test.
Is that right?
And so I couldn't get a medical.
Okay.
And so, well, it's back to going home and being a law enforcement officer. So I'll just continue
hearing?
That. So between shooting guns and airplanes, I have the high register is pretty much gone.
Is that right?
But normal conversation, everything's fine. I don't need hearing aids, that kind of stuff. But it was enough that it kept me out of the flight program for the military. And then in 2017, a friend and I were riding our motorcycles down the street, and we saw a couple guys fly over here in the foothills in those powered parachutes.
Yes.
And we chased them down in the desert and said, man, this is cool. How do we do this? They said, come back tomorrow. We'll take you flying. And that was the beginning of the rest of the story.
That's funny you think that it's cool, because I hate those people. I'm like, what the? They look like they fly right over me. And I'm like, this is private property. You have no respect. They'll fly over the bombing range.
There's no private property.
I know. Well, in law school, they're like, you own from your perimeter to the moon, you know, all the way up space. So
Until you look at the 14 CFR and see that you don't own anything above 10 feet above your house.
They lied
basically.
To us.
Yeah.
But and then they just like buzz over into the bombing range. I'm like, surely you can't do that, you know.
And ironically, you can't.
Yeah.
I found out the hard way.
Oh, you did.
As a student pilot, I was out flying solo and thought, oh, I'm just going to fly up to a Fortuna mine from behind the Walmart. And as I'm, you know, an hour flight into it, just kind of tooling around, I see some guy in a truck kind of start following me. And
oh, no.
I go in and land finally at myself. And the guy, it's a, you know, one of the guys from the range, one of the law enforcement officers on the base. And he's like, what are you doing? You can't do this. And I'm like, well, it says here on my aviation map that below 3,000 feet. And he goes, well, I don't know anything about that map, but you're on a bombing range and here's a ticket.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Which, okay. Great, I did it. The hard part was because it was a federal ticket, it was a misdemeanor charge, and I had to contact our U.S. Attorney's office and let them know that now I have been charged with a misdemeanor crime for basically trespassing.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Upgrading your home should be exciting, not stressful. At DreamLux Remodeling, Yuma's locally owned experts, we bring you affordable luxury with hassle-free remodeling. From grout-free luxury baths and showers to energy-efficient windows and doors, we use only the best products from Kohler, Delta, and Anderson. Schedule your free consultation today at dreamlux.us or call 928-236-5694. DreamLux, affordable, local, luxurious. License number 352-236.
No young person should ever have to worry about having a safe place to sleep at night, or a warm meal to eat, or whether anyone cares about them.
But the reality is, 1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year.
But the good news is, there's an organization making a big difference. Covenant House.
For over 50 years, Covenant House has been helping youth in crisis and giving them the support and the tools they need to succeed in life.
I have no words to express how Covenant House changed my life. They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges.
Covenant House is changing the lives of young people in cities across America.
To learn more, go to covenanthouse.org today.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive, like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex, how did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom! I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
You know, I paid the fine and did what needed to be done because I made the mistake. And it turns out there is a 3,000-foot limit, but it's for a very slight sliver. It's right along Interstate 8.
Yes.
It's east of... Telegraph Pass, mm-hmm. So it was an expensive mistake and a very embarrassing one, seeing how what I was doing in the Border Patrol at the time. I had to call my boss, and it is what it is.
I thought you were going to go somewhere else with that, like that epiphany that you had. Like, it was in that moment where I understood that law enforcement over punishes people sometimes. No, you're not
well,
that
you know,
far?
So I've never made it onto a jury because, you know, they ask you, you know, can you judge this person's innocent or guilt? I never arrested anybody that wasn't guilty. You know, so I was guilty. I did what I did, you know, but it is what it is.
That's funny.
But so going back to the original question. So when I just a couple of months before I retired, I, I got an opportunity to start learning how to fly a fixed wing. And so I started doing that and got my pilot's license. And Jared, who was running the flight school, is like, Dan, I need some help. Would you mind answering emails at phones? You seem to be really good at talking to students and people that are interested. And I said, yeah, I'll be glad to do it. And so I did that for about 18 months. And Jared decided he needed to sell the flight school because he's just busy with his other aviation career. And gave me the opportunity to take ownership over it. And so here we are.
You got nothing else to do?
I had lots going on. I didn't realize how much more I was going to be doing. Now I'm super busy. And
is it like babysitting?
No, not really. The hardest part really is keeping an instructor around long enough to have some continuity.
Mm-hmm. That was a frustration I ran into, was that model. Because when I was booking my time to do flights, it's like, well, sometimes that doesn't match up with the instructor that I did most of my stuff with. And so you would kind of start back at zero because this other person, the other flight instructor that I have time to fly at this time and it's a different instructor, but now he doesn't know me or my tendencies or where I'm really at. He can look at my logbook, but that doesn't tell the whole story. And so you're always kind of like constantly starting back at zero. And it's super frustrating.
And so that's one of the things that we were able to start changing, because Jared just didn't have the ability to it. He had brought in a permanent instructor, but it was just one, and there wasn't really enough business at the time to really make ends meet for that guy.
Sure.
So there are 7 instructors now at Fly 928. And so when a prospective student calls up, you know, I try to find out, what's your schedule? How do I match you with somebody and let's keep them there
Them
with that same instructor in the same airplane? We have 5 airplanes we're flying. And so the continuity exists there so that we can help you do it with the least amount of stress, but also not spending extra money because of this retraining because of a new instructor or a different airplane. And so we're really trying to make that. It doesn't work perfectly. You know, I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks, and so one of the other instructors is going to step in and take care of my students while I'm gone. But we have communicated, so they're not going to try to change anything. They're just going to keep the program moving forward so that they're going to continue to do that. I think it's one of the benefits that we now have at Fly 928 that's different than some of the other opportunities in town.
What's your perspective about injecting technology into this area? What I mean by that is simulation. I know there's kind of 2 camps. You've got the push against it. Like, simulation will never get to the point where you learn like you can in an actual cockpit. And then there's others that are like, no, that's the way to really build time without spending a lot of money.
So we do have a flight simulator. As a private pilot, you can use up to 2.5 hours of that towards your time. So it saves you almost $100 an hour to do that. But at some point in time, that's not helping you get to the minimums that you need for the FAA test, but it does help in other areas. So one of the things is that I like to feel the airplane. I like to feel the flaps go in. I like to feel the climbs and the descents. When you're in the simulator, the one that we have, it's a basic aviation training device. It doesn't move, just the screens do. And so you just get that visual reference. But what it does do is it helps you to work on using the throttles correctly, turning the yoke and the ailerons right, and then seeing the correct sight picture as you're looking down to land, because we all want to fly it by the seat of our pants, but that doesn't make good stabilized flights a lot. And so we can use a simulator so they're not spending as much time. There's no damage to the aircraft if they have a flat landing or a nose down landing, but they can take the concept of coming into land, hitting the flare and the roundout, and watching the screen widen and understand what that concept looks like, which, telling you right now, and the people that are listening are like, I have no idea what he's talking about. But you can see it happen in the simulator and not at the same time worried about crashing an airplane.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of benefit to it. And there's some really magnificent ones out there that cost $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 to do, that I'm sure the military is using, and of course the airlines are using it, that really simulate what's going on in the airplane. There's definitely a benefit to using it. And it's a great tool to get people interested too. See what it's like taking it. We intend to take it to the air show this coming year and having people just walk through it that are just coming through. Hey, jump in here and do 15 minutes to see what it's like to fly an airplane.
So you're actually inside a...
So we've got it inside an enclosed trailer with an air conditioning unit on it, and that's the only thing in it that the aircraft simulation and the instructor who's giving inputs to the computer.
Are you simulating the radio, the ATC, and the calls?
And so we can do that. If it's hooked up to Wi-Fi, you can actually be flying current weather at whatever airport you're flying at as well. So that is all possible to do. Because we're at such a great airport with a tower, most of our people, once they've got their private pilot's license, are pretty comfortable talking on the radio. So it's not really necessary.
Sure. Yeah, that's one of the most challenging things, I think, as a student pilot, is trying to multitask, talking to tower, or even on an untowered airfield, you should be making your calls so everybody's aware, you know, if there's anybody in the area. But that's the most challenging, I would argue, is, yeah, am I saying this right? When do I say it? You know, and at the same time, I've got to get this airplane down. I've got to be pulling the throttle back, lowering my RPMs, you know, all that kind of stuff, putting flaps in. So you're multitasking and all this stuff happening so quickly. I think one of the most challenging things is talking on the radio at the same time, trying to do all that kind of stuff. So in a simulation, I can see where if you just do it over and over and over again, you get better and better without having to be up in the air. And
well, I think some continuity with an instructor on understanding how that process works, and then not waiting till the last minute to do it. Try not to do it all in this span of, you know, we're getting ready to land and we're landing in 5 minutes. Let's do everything right now. What can we do ahead of time using checklists? And then, you know, at 10 miles out, you make your first call and let people know that you're there. Yeah. At the end of the day, you've got to fly the airplane first. And then what I tell a lot of students is you're going to make mistakes on the radio, and every one of us has been there.
Yeah.
Just fix it and move on. Don't dwell on making a mistake or saying something stupid, because you will.
Yeah.
And we'll all laugh about it. But 10 minutes later, somebody else is going to do it, and we're going to completely forget about yours. So,
did you ever hear the story? I had to – so we took out – it was a 47 Lima, me and Greg. And we were doing – you know, I was doing my thing. Great flight, great lesson. And we come back into Yuma to land, and for some reason, like, nobody's talking to us. Or they're talking to us and we're talking back, but, you know, they're just not, like, responding quickly. So we get on the ground, and then finally we get contact from ATC, and they're like, come over here, and they're basically yelling at us. And I guess our audio out was not working. So we could hear them, but they couldn't hear us. And I was making my calls and all that stuff. But as a consequence, I had to now go over to Millionaire, use their little kiosk, their little computer kiosk, and write an FAA report and report all that. And so that wasn't a fun experience. And then probably like 8 months later, I get this letter in the mail from NASA. I'm like, NASA? And I open it up. It's like, we went through your case. Everything's fine. You know, like, don't do it again kind of thing. I'm like, what the heck? So I've lived and learned from that situation. You got to check the radios. And we checked them. I mean, you do your checklist, but at the same time, it's like sometimes you just don't know.
Well, and I was in another plane where we were making our calls halfway through. We were just working in the pattern with a student, and then it stopped. We stopped receiving. And they were hearing us, but we weren't hearing them. And so, you know, as we talk about look for light signals, it's the first time in 700 hours I actually saw it work, and it worked out exactly the way it was supposed to. But one of the things was just, what was the awareness? And it turned out that there was a button that was pushed as we were just mashing buttons on the radio, and it ended up where we weren't hearing anything.
I see.
And so, it's messed up when that happens. You just don't know what to do. Having a second radio in there. And it also, I had a handheld radio. So now I carry it with me every time we go up with a student, just because never know.
Yeah. Coming into this, you were texting, you're like, what are we talking about? And I told you when you got here, I don't like to have a plan. I just like to have an organic conversation. And he said, you don't like that. You don't live your life like that.
I really don't. Everything's planned out. I know what's happening this time next year.
Why do you think that is? Is this a learned thing, a learned habit, or is this that's just your personality?
You know, I don't remember it being that way when I was a kid, but like I said, at 14, I knew I wanted to be a cop.
Yeah.
And so I knew I couldn't get in trouble with the normal stuff that teenagers do because I may not be able to be a cop. And so that planning probably started there. And, but you know, I know what vacations are coming up. You know, we've already booked a cruise for December of 26, you know, so things are far out in advance. We're going on a road trip next week, and we have a place we need to get to, but in the immediate time, it's on my wife now. It's something I'm letting go some authority, I guess. And she's going to say, we're going to stop here for the night. And I'm like, well, where are we going to stay? I don't know. We'll see where we get there. And I'm like,
yeah, really?
I'm not digging that at all. But
really?
She loves that part of the trip. And I'm like, well, we're going from here to Chicago. All right. Well, I can be there in 28 hours.
No stop.
So let's go.
I'm wearing a diaper.
No. Wait, something in, something out, and gas. So better. Hopefully you can hold it for gas.
How many kids do you have?
I have two adult sons.
Yeah, they're adults now. I have six kids, and so when you talk about road trips and I'm getting there in 28 hours, like you plan, yeah, good luck with that. You got to triple that. Like every 5 minutes you're stopping for using the potty, and so I can tell you don't have little kids in that car when you're going up to Chicago.
No, probably not. We'll see. Things are starting to soften now that I've become a grandpa.
Is that right?
We'll see. Everybody's laughing at me because they're like, you're going to change them? I'm like, no. Oh, immediately, first day.
Have there been – so going back to this tendency of yours, so like I like things planned out, meticulous. I want to know. That tends to – and I'm guessing here. Well, at least, I don't know. Through experience, I would say most people get frustrated or really become downtrodden sometimes when – they plan so much and it doesn't work to plan. So do you get frustrated or angry when you're like, I have this plan and we're not, you know?
So I guess it depends on what the plan is, because my wife would say, yeah, if it's not going according to plan, you're not happy. And other people can tell. But I also, because of time in the military and time in law enforcement, I plan for stuff so that when things just fall apart.
Yeah.
We knew what direction we were going in, so I can adjust and do that. It's usually time constraints or things that I don't see as emergencies or vital, like in the law enforcement military world. You know, when somebody's like, oh, I forgot this, and so now I have to stop and pick it up at the store or something. I'm like,
no patience.
We're on time, yeah.
I have no patience.
That is probably my biggest weakness, is no patience for people that have created an emergency that didn't need to happen.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game. Marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company. and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
In tough times, it can be difficult to know where to turn. If you or someone you know is looking for help, the Yuma Community Food Bank is here if you need a hand. We provide food and other resources to families, seniors, and individuals in need. We are open Monday through Friday. All you need to receive a food box is a photo ID with your current address. Visit our website at yumafoodbank.org for more information. The Yuma Community Food Bank also accepts donations in the form of non-perishable food, monetary donations, and volunteer help. You can choose to donate or advocate. You can choose to volunteer or raise awareness. You can choose to help end hunger. Call us anytime, 928-343-1243. Visit our main campus, located at 2404 East 24th Street, or use our food locator map online at yumafoodbank.org.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
El Dorado Broadcasters and this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members. Eddie's Food and Drink, CNS Signs, Bang Auto Glass, Mary Kay and Nancy Sabalos, and MB Flooring LLC. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Valeria at yumachamber.org. That's Valeria at yumachamber.org. Or call 928-782-2567.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's probably the easiest way to say that.
You're the contingency guy.
And I can. If something happens, I will have five different things to fix it. And there's nothing insurmountable.
So when we've been communicating through text, through email, and your email says Pastor Dan. That's your email.
Yep.
Call sign, if you will. So as you're telling me this story, I'm thinking, I wonder if that's how God sees us. Like, you're supposed to be doing stuff and you're not. You're like not on time, you know? You ever think of that?
God has been so patient with me, and he's been patient with mankind. I mean, all these thousands of years. I think he's chosen to give me this no patience gene because that's the thorn in my side that I'm having to carry like Paul. But God's the most patient person out there.
That's interesting that you bring that, you say it that way. You frame it that way as if, because you recognize it, but you're working on it. I think that's awesome.
Well, it's definitely been a work in progress. I am a lot better than I was. My boys are like, where were you when I was a kid and I was having these problems and it was like, it's going to be this way and you're going to do it and now you're grounded, or it's time for a spanking. And now it's like, all right, well, let's talk about that and let's see how things go. And he goes, where were you? And I go, well, I've only been a grandpa now for about, I don't know, 18 months. So, and what do you do with an 18-month-old kid? But I didn't have a journey with God when my kids were young. And so that
you
came late. Did not.
You did not.
So that came later. Okay. And there was definitely a time and a place where things changed. And it was a drastic change that people could see. Even my kids will say, oh, yeah, Dad before God, Dad after God.
Is that right?
Big difference. And it wasn't that I was violent or mean or angry, but it was my way or the highway. And it was according to Dan's law. And that's just the way it was going to be. And there was no way around it. And I was very strict.
Was your dad like that with you?
No. You know, people are like, you must have got that from your dad because he was a Marine. No, my dad was great. I only had probably two arguments with my dad in my whole life. One of them was around me losing a wallet on a vacation. And I wanted him to stop. And he's like, it's gone. I'm like, we got to stop. And I remember that was, I was like, why won't he stop? And he ended up stopping, and it turns out the wallet had fallen onto the step railing on the outside of our Suburban, and it had rode there for like 20 miles.
Are you kidding me?
And there was nothing in it. You know, I was 16 years old.
But your wallet, but it was yours, yeah.
So that one comes to mind, and then when I joined the Air Force, he didn't want me to go in the Marine Corps either. He was a college administrator, go to school for free. He was the first person in his family to get a college degree. And he wanted that for all of his kids, and I was the oldest, and I was not a good student. I didn't like the education part of school, like the socialization part of school. I struggled in math. It was a struggle every day. I didn't want that, and I didn't think I'd ever get a college degree. And Dad wanted me to go to school, and then I enlisted in the Marine Corps, or I had intended to enlist in the Marine Corps, but my parents had to sign. And, of course, the recruiter said, yeah, you can be a cop. My dad had been a Marine recruiter, and he's like, unless the rules have changed, you can't be a cop. And so my dad had the Marine recruiter come over and talk to them without me telling him that my dad had been a Marine recruiter, and basically laid into the guy. And so that's where the truth came out. So I had left, or the recruiter had my birth certificate. So the next day I had to go get it. And when I went back to the recruiting office, I picked it up. And I was going to go talk to the Army, and I couldn't go in the Navy because my dad was a Marine. So I never heard anything good about the Navy, so I couldn't go in the Navy. So I stuck my head in the Air Force guy's thing. He says, well, 17. I says, can I get it in writing? He said, yeah. And I said, sign me up. And then I went home and told my dad I enlisted in the Air Force, and that was probably the most mad I'd ever seen him.
Is that right?
At me. Because I think he thought, okay, now I finally, we're going to get him into college, and he's going to have a good start. And then I come home, and not only – am I not going to college? I'm going into the Boy Scouts and not even in the military. And but he came around very quickly when he came to visit me, and I was, 8 months into the military, and I'm sharing a room with one guy and sharing a bathroom with another two guys, and he lived in a Quonset hut with 40 guys his whole military career, Yeah. So he's like, well, maybe he's not as dumb as I thought
it's
he was.
Club, yeah, the Air Force Club.
Yep. And I take the ribbing from the guys. Go ahead, I get it. But I ate really well, and, I only camped out like five times.
I love it. Yeah, that's what I said in the beginning, the smart guy going into the Air Force. Well, so what happened? I'm interested to know, you were kind of, let's say, hard in the beginning with your boys. Where was this transit? What motivated you to, I guess, turn to God in your words?
Like I said, everything was my way or the highway, and it was with the boys. And I was starting to have dad-son issues where he wasn't doing what he needed to do based on my rules, and there were some pretty good shouting matches, and things weren't going well. And
how old?
He was eighth, ninth grade.
Eighth, ninth, okay, freshman.
And we had moved from Yuma to Washington, D.C., because I had taken an assignment at our headquarters. And we're living in Manassas, Virginia. And one Saturday, we just had an argument. No punches thrown, but it was enough to the point where I'm like, if something doesn't change, one of us is going to end up dead or in jail. And that statement's probably a little more dramatic than it really was. But it was one of those times, it was finally, I came to a realization that something needs to happen. And my wife and I were talking, and she's like, well, he was wrong, but you weren't really right either. And I says, well, I don't know what to do. She goes, well, I don't know what to do either. You need to decide something. And I said, well, I've tried everything else, so let's try going to church. It was really
that. I wonder why. Why did that pop into your mind?
Well, my parents, we grew up in Assemblies of God Church in Prescott. My parents took me. About the time I was 15, I was dating a girl that went to a different church, and so I didn't want to go to church anymore. I wanted to go over here, and all that fell apart. But so I really stopped going to church when I was about 15 or 16 years old. And I had done well. I mean, I did well in the military. I had some great assignments. I got promoted ahead of time and did well in the military and in law enforcement, and then I was doing really well in the Border Patrol. And so believed in God. I mean, we prayed over our meals and stuff like that, but I didn't see where God did any of that. I did it all. And so that was kind of my perspective on it. But then when we come to that point where things have not gone well and I didn't know where else to turn, I'm like, well, I've tried everything else, so why don't we try going to church? So, and I tell people when I have told this story, don't go to God last. He'll take you last. But really, if you start there, you won't have all these things. You won't have a story to tell. So that's what happened. So, you know, this is before internet. Everybody was doing Google searches. This is 2008. And so I walk downstairs and pull out the phone book for our area, which is, you know, like this thick in the Washington, D.C. area. And my wife's like, well, I told her, I think we need to try to go to church. She goes, I've tried in the past. You don't go. The kids don't want to be there. You know, so pick a church. We'll go there, and we're going, and there's no turning back. So I went downstairs, opened up a phone book, and I went, well, what church am I going to go to? And I go, well, my parents took me to Assemblies of God. Is that really a thing? So I looked it up, and there was two of them within 5 miles of us. And I said, well, I'll go to this one tomorrow. And walking through the doors of that church that day changed everything.
Really?
Immediately. There was this calmness in our house that afternoon. It didn't start out that way that morning, but that's how it ended out that day, and we never looked back.
Why did it end up like that? What was it?
Well, so that morning, you know, I get up and I announced to everybody, hey, we're going to church today. They're like, we're not going to church.
He sprung them on them the morning of?
Of the morning church. Oh, and no. I'm like, it's time to go. I mean,
that's not teenagers.
I didn't physically do this, but I basically had to drag him out of the bed and say, get dressed, we're going to church. And my wife has a little anxiety in large crowds and stuff, and it turns out the church that I picked was one of the is in the top 25 of the Assemblies of God nationwide. And so, you know, there's 3,000 people in service.
Oh, my gosh, 3,000 people.
We come around the corner, and she's like, of the building, she's like, we can't go in there. Well, we've already had this huge fight coming in, and the kids are like, oh, no. And I go, she's like, we can't go in there. I go, we're going in there. We can't let the gas off now. We're going in. We walked in the door. Some people greeted us, took our boys up to age-appropriate stuff, and we went in to the service. And, you know, my wife was completely uncomfortable the whole time. And towards the end of the service, she's like, things were okay, but I can't come back here. I'm just too – it's driving me crazy internally. And I'm like, we don't have to come back, but we had to do this. And we walk out the door. The kids come running downstairs, and they're like, hey, they're having church tonight. Can we come back tonight? And that's exactly what happened. My wife's like, oh, no. Well, that ended up becoming our family away from home because, well, you know, our family was here in Arizona.
Yeah.
I do have some family in Maryland, but I didn't grow up with them. But so that was our family. And so our relationships, some of our adult relationships still go back to that church in Manassas, and we left in 2012. But that's where things started to happen. And it wasn't long after that I got connected by being part of the choir at the church. And
oh, you can sing too, huh?
Well,
you can do it all.
I like to sing. Let's say that. So that's kind of how that happened. But there was an immediate change in our house that day. The relationship, I wouldn't say was completely healed, but it was probably 75% healed. And, you know, so proud of my boys now. My son is married to an Italian in Italy, working in the ministry for her parents' church, and was probably one of the major players in helping the Protestant church, evangelical church in Italy get through COVID because he knew how to use cameras, and they did podcasts and stuff so people could go to church in Italy. And
so it's not an Assemblies of God.
They are. They're not Assemblies of God denomination, but they're Protestant, not Catholic. And I mean, they're at a week-long retreat right now, and it's continuing, bringing in mission organization stuff, doing an amazing job. My son is completely plugged into the church and married to a licensed minister in Phoenix, and you know, so. That never would have happened.
Yeah, it changed the trajectory of your family.
It certainly did.
We're out of time. I have so many questions for you. I'll have to have you back.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad, see?
That wasn't terrible.
I know you were really nervous about this. It wasn't planned out, but you did great. But we are out of time. One last thing. What would you tell a kid that's in his teenage years trying to figure out life. Any words of advice from Dan Han?
Just good life advice is, you know that we're not here under our own power. I mean, there really is a God, and having a relationship with God changed my life. And I see the trajectory of what my kids are doing, and it's because each one of them chose to go there. But if it hadn't been for my parents getting me in church and then me dragging my kids to church that first time, really it was that first time. After that, they've wanted to go and almost had to drag us sometimes, because sometimes you wake up and you're just not ready to go.
You're not feeling it.
That decision will guide whatever you do. I can look back on all these things. The resume happened because God put those things in my place, and I didn't know they were happening. But I can look back and go, oh, yeah, I can see where God did this. And I can even go back and point to a time and say, I can see how God did that. And you know what? I think I actually heard his voice, and I just thought I had indigestion kind of thing. And how I got there. I mean, so stuff in the Border Patrol, the promotions I had. I mean, I had an amazing career. And I could still be there if I chose to do that, but I felt that God wanted me to do this men's ministry thing. And that was a great opportunity. And in the meantime, I was, you know, helping out with the flight school, and here I am doing this now. And, you know, I'm going to turn 55 in a couple of months, and I'm not slowing down. I'm just not getting a government paycheck anymore. I am getting my pension, but which is allowing me to do stuff that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
All from these decisions that you made along the way, these little checkpoints, if you will.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks for sharing your time with us. We'll have to have you back on because we got to get back into some other stuff. But thanks for having the time to come over here and get this done.
Glad to do it. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Statistics show that roughly 20 veterans die by suicide every day in the United States. And each day, over 1,000 dogs are euthanized in shelters across the country. Canines for Warriors is the leading nonprofit organization providing highly trained service dogs to veterans with PTSD and other invisible wounds of war.
I'd probably still be stuck in a living room with the curtains drawn, with my back to the wall, with probably a gun on my lap.
The majority of service dogs from Canines are rescues, and with each pairing, two lives are changed forever. We rescue the dog rescues the warrior. To learn more about how Canines for Warriors is saving lives at both ends of the leash, please visit caninesforwarriors.org. That's caninesforwarriors.org.
Outings around the water are supposed to be fun. Help keep them that way by remembering the 5 layers of protection from drowning. Install fences and alarms around pools. Supervise swimmers vigilantly. Make sure everyone in the pool knows basic water skills. Use life jackets around open water and always prepare for the possibility of emergencies with rescue skills such as CPR. Together, these 5 layers can keep the good times good, because anyone can drown, no one should. This message brought to you by the Greater Yuma Water Safety Alliance.
Small businesses are the heart of America. Like you, these entrepreneurs started out with a dream and a drive to build a better life. If you have a small business idea to grow or challenge to face, you don't have to go it alone. Since 1964, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. Today, they are the nation's largest nonprofit source of expert mentoring, resources, and education. SCORE will match you with specialized mentors. Our thousands of volunteers provide the guidance and connections you need for free. Your success is waiting. SCORE is ready to help. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Our connections make powerful things happen, uniting individuals and communities. We are Rotary. We are people of action. With over 1 million members, we know what people can do when they come together. Find out more at rotary.org/action.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.